Good morning in Jesus' name. I don't know if I just got up here too late to see the children's verses or to hear it, or if they didn't have children's verses this morning, but I always enjoy that part of the service. A couple of weeks ago in our service in San Antonio, we had a couple of children saying a verse, and the teacher had a little bit of a hard time getting them to say it quite right, and then they didn't say it quite right. The verse was, "The Lord knoweth them that are his," and they said, "The Lord knoweth." Two little boys up there saying, "The Lord knoweth that them are his." And I liked that, actually. I thought, yeah, them are his. And that really actually impressed me, and I thought it was kind of a neat little thing. Some of us didn't expect to be here this morning. I expected to be in San Antonio this morning with all our churches and having a communion service. But this comes as no surprise to the Lord. And it's been a reminder this weekend of the blessings of faithfulness, the blessings that come from making choices to follow Jesus early in life. And if we let ourselves think a little bit of how different this could have been. Brother Robert could have been laid to rest with a handful of people to mourn his passing, or maybe almost nobody to come together and comfort each other and remember. And it's not hard to look back and see that because of the choices he made to allow Jesus to be the Lord of his life, he has this legacy that he left behind. What is harder for us to do is to really come to grips with the fact that the choices that I make now will determine that for me. Especially when we're young, it's hard to really just get a hold of that, just get an understanding of that, that it really is important, the choices that I make now. But it's something that we need to remind ourselves of, and we need to take it seriously. I want to read this morning a few verses from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, one of the most admired, I think, probably. The Sermon on the Mount may be one of the most admired chapters in the Bible, one of the most admired passages of the Bible, probably also one of the most ignored passages in the Bible is when it comes to actually living it out. Some people conveniently put it off to another age when when it will be possible to live the Sermon on the Mount. But if we believe that the kingdom of God is now, and then these things are for now, because these are the kingdom disciples live this way now. So just a few verses. Chapter 5, verse 13, and down to 16. "Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on an hill cannot be hid, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all them that are in the house." All that are in the house. "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." Now Jesus said to his disciples, those people after he had given them the Beatitudes and so on, he said to them, "You are the light of the world." And he's talking about people that are going to be his followers. He says to them, "You are the salt of the earth." And he didn't say to them, "I am the salt of the earth." He said, "You are the salt of the earth." And all of us know, and maybe I'll just say this before I forget. And I think that one of the reasons that Jesus said that you are the salt of the earth is because, and he used that expression like that, is because There can never be too much of Jesus. There can be such a thing as too much of us. There can be such a thing as too much salt in our experience. But there can never be too much of Jesus. There can be too much of us, probably. But we all know that in Jesus' day, salt was very important. We all know that the word that people sometimes were paid wages in salt. Salt was that valuable. It was worth its weight in gold, pretty much. That the word salary comes from salt. We know those things. And it was valuable. And today it's valuable as well. It's a very important part of our existence. It isn't as costly as it was in Jesus' day, but it is still very valuable. So guess how much salt was produced in the United States in the year 2 years ago, 2022. Anybody want to give a guess? Maybe somebody studied this recently and they know. Any idea how much salt was produced in the United States and from the various forms? So let's try 42 million tons. But you know what? That wasn't enough. They had to import another 17 million tons for a total of about almost 60 million tons of salt used in the United States. Now, it didn't all go on the table. A lot of it went on the roads. But salt is such a big part of life. Around 59 million tons. But that's not near all the salt that was produced in the world. Globally, 2022, around 111 million tons of salt. So, just to think about this a little bit, let's say you wanted to load 111 million tons of salt on dump trucks. It would take, if you're going to have a 10-wheelers and you'd put 15 tons of salt on each one, it would take 7,400,000 dump trucks load of salt. And then let's say you want to put those all in a row, because you know when you have trucks, you like to line them up. So you line them up, nose to tail, and guess what? They go all the way to China, and then all the way back to the United States, and all the way to China, and almost back to the United States again, twice, almost two rings around the world. That's how much salt is produced in 1 year in the whole world. So you notice that Jesus said to his disciples, "You are the salt of the earth." He did not say, "You're the sugar." He said, "You're the salt." Nothing wrong with sugar, but he didn't say that we're supposed to be sugar. So how is a kingdom disciple like salt? Well, salt in your food it makes it taste right. Most food, I'd say, without salt just doesn't taste quite right. But you can't see the salt. You never say the salt is good. You say the food is good because even though the salt is what made it good. It's an influence that works behind the scenes. And a whole lot of what we do as Christians, as followers of Jesus, is not really that visible. Our influence on society isn't so much it's not meant to be so much out front and center. It just makes society what it should be. It makes things work right. The Christian influence, the godly influence. Salt is a stabilizer. In bread, salt keeps your yeast from working. Yeast is sort of an unstable substance. And if you don't have salt in your bread, well, for one thing, the bread doesn't taste good after you're done. But also what can happen is that the yeast will kind of be unstable and you'll get these big old bubbles in your bread. Air bubbles. So salt is a binder, so that it's really important for your body to have enough salt so that it carries the nutrients to the rest of your body. You get low in salt, the nutrients that you need can't be carried through your bloodstream as well. That's probably one of the reasons that a saline solution is often used in your drips. salt's a preserver. It's used to cure meat and preserve it for a long time. We know that salt brings out flavor. I disagree completely with putting salt on watermelon, but not everybody does. I do agree with putting salt on oranges. It actually tastes quite good. You should try it sometime. Oranges, and if you have some, like, red pepper to put on it, it tastes quite nice. You should try it sometime if you haven't. And I think you'll probably enjoy it. We like to take oranges and chop them up into little pieces and then just add a little bit of, a little bit of salt and red pepper and eat them like that. That's good. So Jesus said, Jesus said this thing about his disciples that they're going to be the salt of the earth, or that they are the salt of the earth. The rabbis, but he also said if the salt has lost its savor, it's not good anymore. Really, it's not good for anything except to be cast out and be trodden under foot of men. And Jesus may have been talking about, the salt that we know today, table salt, it doesn't lose its savor. It can sit on the shelf for decades and it's still salty. So Jesus may have been talking, maybe the salt that they used in Jesus' day was something different. I've heard that it was, that some of the salt that they used actually came from the air sort of distilling on the rocks around the Dead Sea, and it was a little bit of a salty, flaky stuff, but that the sun would actually make it, at night it would settle and distill and kind of crystallize on the rocks, when the sun hit it again, it just kind of lost its saltiness. Maybe he was talking about that, but I think it's likely that Jesus was actually talking about something else a little bit. So the rabbis had this, used the word salt, or salt was represented of wisdom, and the rabbis used salt as an image for wisdom, and we see that in Colossians, where Paul says, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt. If we think about that as meaning that let your speech be wise, it makes sense. And that ye may know how to answer, that ye may know how to give an answer to every man. So, yeah, that makes sense, that would be that, he's referring to that image that the rabbis used to use. And then when Jesus says that, if the salt has lost its savor, that three words in our Bible, lost its savor, is one Greek word which means literally to become foolish. It's at least one of the meanings of that word. So if you become foolish in society, you've lost your, you're not wise anymore, you're not behaving wisely, you've lost your savor, then, well, you're really not a contribution anymore. You're not, you've lost your saltiness, you've lost your ability to influence. there is that about salt. Salt is working behind the scenes, and most of the time we notice salt when it's not there, you know. And that's how often it is with the Christian influence. We don't, when the Christian influence is there, society just works like it's supposed to. We don't really even think that much of it. It's working well. When it's missing is when we notice things aren't going well at all, because of the salt is lacking. Jesus also said that you are the light of the world. And again, he did not say, I'm the light of the world. Well, actually, he did. But in this case, he didn't. There were twice, at least, that Jesus said that. In the book of John, he said, right after his encounter with the adulterous woman, he said, I am the light of the world. And another time, after he had restored the sight to the blind man in John chapter 9, he said the same thing. As long as I am the world, I am the light of the world. He did say that. But in this case here, he's not saying that. He says, ye are the light of the world. And did he misspeak, or did the writer get it a little bit wrong? Or did he really mean to say that ye are the light of the world? And I think he got it right. I think that Jesus said exactly what he meant. I think it's written was written correctly, and I think that our translation is correct when it says that Jesus said that you are the light of the world. And he doesn't say, now sometimes we use this example, and it's right, that we are reflectors, that God is actually, that Jesus is actually the light, we're reflecting that light. That's good. But that's not what Jesus is saying here. He's saying, ye are the light of the world. And I think that's what he means. So we ask ourselves the question, where does that light come from? John chapter 1, verse 9, the apostle John is writing about John the Baptist, and he says, back up just a little bit. He's talking about John the Baptist. He says, he was not that light, but he was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. And so Jesus was that true light that lights every man that comes into the world. So that light, even though we are the light, where does it come from? It comes from Jesus. He's the one that lights every man that comes into the world. And I think that means two things. I think it means that every person that's ever been born has been born with a spark of light in him, a consciousness, a conscience. And I believe it means that. I also believe it means that every bit of light that a man has, that any man has to come from Jesus. He is the only source of light. Someone has said all truth is God's truth. And I think it could also be said that all light is God's light. So no matter who says truth, even if that person himself is whatever he is, truth is God's truth. It belongs to God. The Satan or anybody else, nobody else has it, has truth. God has truth. All truth is God's truth. And I think we could say that all light is God's light. So that's the source of light, is Jesus. And also, Jesus just got done teaching or giving these, what we call the Beatitudes, these kind of people that are poor in spirit, truly humble, recognizing their need people. The ones that mourn for their sins, and the ones that are meek, that they have strength, but they control their strength. They do not use their strength in a way that is selfish or harmful. That's meekness and merciful. And those who are hungry for righteousness, and those that have pure hearts, and that are peacemakers, and then those that are, and then on top of all of that, they are misunderstood and persecuted because they're followers of Christ. And they take all this with joy. Those people are the light of the world. He says, you are the light of the world. Right after he gives this list of things that characterize his followers, you are the light of the world. So he says, let your light so shine before men. Let your light shine to reveal truth. Use your light in a way that's helpful. When you were young, you might have used to think when your dad told you to hold the light for him because he wants to do a work, some kind of work, you maybe thought that the best thing to do was shine it right in his eyes so that he could see. Well, that doesn't work. And I think sometimes as followers of Jesus, we use our light in a way that's not so helpful. I'm kind of painting with broad strokes here a little bit, and don't tie me down too much on the technicalities here. But it seems like sometimes so I think what Jesus wants us to do is use our light in a way that is actually helpful. Use it to reveal reality. You know, if you are walking through the bushes with someone that has a flashlight, and you don't have a light, he has a light, and he is just walking way ahead of you, it's a little bit hard for you to keep up. And if he stands way ahead of you, if he stands ahead of you and he wants to help you and he shines the light back right in your face, it's not very helpful. It's a little bit more helpful if he shines on the path. But you know the best way that he can help you with that light is to stand beside you and walk with you, and you're walking together and you're shining. And can we just kind of use that as an encouragement for the light that we have, to walk beside someone else and shine, just make some light for them? Can we do that? I think that's what Jesus wants us to do. I think that's what Jesus, God, is calling us to do. Light shows things how they really are. In the dark, we can imagine anything. Light doesn't really change what's real. It just shows us what's there. Light won't take away the bear in the path if there is one, but it will show whether there really is or there isn't. So shine your light. Light isn't discriminating. When there is light, everybody can see by it. Light brings out beauty. You know, you could be in the most beautiful surroundings, and if it's totally dark, you don't get anything out of it. So let your light bring out beauty. Let your light so shine that before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. Let's stand for prayer.